Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
Hello, my name is Rahasia and I'm going to be your host this evening. And I also write a column for the Lotus Guide magazine, and you can find pretty much everything that I do by typing in hashtag Rahasia Uncensored. Welcome to the Spiritual Activist Radio Show here on BBS Radio. And you might be asking, why spiritual? Well, the way I see it, we are misguided souls looking for the truth of who we are. You might be asking, why activist? Well, because we are living in transformative times when we need to take back our power as spiritual beings and take action in the world, not with violence, but by the evolution of spiritual consciousness and bringing what's going on in the world out into the light. Because like it or not, we are deep into everything from genetic modification to artificial intelligence, and at the same time watching a dysfunctional world collapse right before our very eyes, and a global monetary system that is at the end of its run. Its days are coming to a close. So thank you for tuning in for the next hour, and I hope you enjoy the show. All right, David Cereda, so good to talk to you again, man. It's been a long time. And you know when you first caught my attention? Is when I started watching the research you did on the NASA videos and photographs. I realized, oh my God, this guy really gets into the research and the fine points that sort of pass people by a lot of times. And that's the reason when I seen the thing about the staff you're doing, to be honest with you, if it was anybody else, I wouldn't pay it that much attention, because there's a lot of things out there that can gobble up your time. But knowing your background and your research skills and everything else, it has been an interesting, well, there's been several aha moments. One aha moment was I never put it together that the length of an antenna could equal a certain frequency, and obviously that frequency would tune you in to a certain receiver. And then I started thinking about all the things you're talking about. About especially the length, the 51.5125, and then I started thinking about Area 51, Stonehenge being on the 51st degree. I mean, there's so much out there that it's a little bit overwhelming to just pass it by. So, I think what maybe we could start this out with, I think a lot of your research and reading, and mine too. I love this guy, Fred Alpert Popp, you know, and what he talks about with DNA and being an antenna and everything. Does that enter into this?
Well, Fritz Albert Popp is the German biophysicist who proved that all living systems emit biophotons. So every living biological system is emitting light, and he found that the light it emitted was full rainbow spectrum, but it had a faster than light speed component to it. And whereas, you see, the first transistors that were developed, you know, the transistor changed the history of the world. I remember as a kid in San Francisco, my dad taking us to the racetracks, and my brothers and I would win a little bit of money, and I got my first transistor radio. And you know, we went from tube amp power, which is gas tube amplification, to these tiny little chips called transistors, to run stereo amplifiers and to amplify very weak radio signals so that you could actually hear them. And the transistor is basically, it's multi layers of quartz and conductive materials. So they had these positive-negative-positive transistors, negative-positive-negatives, and they led to transistors also being used as gates, electronic gates. And an Intel computer chip has billions at this point of transistors inside of a single chip, and it's running the entire telecommunication industry, cell phones, TVs, the internet, computers are all run on transistors and crystal oscillators. So crystal oscillators are very similar in that, you know, the early crystal oscillator, they would put two slices of conductive metal in the middle of a piece of quartz, and you run an electric charge through it, and the quartz will generate frequencies. And for any two frequencies, regardless of their distance, set up a bridge of communication in between them, between transmitter and receiver. But in addition to using quartz to generate frequencies in transistors, we always have the component of the antenna. And the antenna, if you remember the early cell phone days, you know, they had this long antenna coming out of this huge box that you would hold to your ear. And slowly that antenna got smaller and smaller and smaller. And eventually you don't see it anymore because it's so small. Now, the height of an antenna as what's called a monopole transmitter receiver is a quarter of its wavelength that it transmits at. So that means that the formula to calculate the frequency of the antenna's optimal functioning frequency is the height of the antenna times 4. So when I was looking at the idea that Moses' staff, and going back, the staff goes way back to the Garden of Eden, but just starting with Moses, the idea that he was, you know, he took his staff everywhere he went. It was coiled. It was made of brass or gold, and it had sapphires in it. That's what we know from multiple ancient sources. And so when he's holding this staff up, then he's transmitting. He's telepathing to God. And then when he holds it in the ground, it becomes a negative receiver. And that's a passive antenna. There's enough electricity in the human biological nervous system that the moment you touch a conductive staff, there's enough electricity that you will slowly calibrate your nervous system at the frequency of its wavelength. But the thing is, it wasn't easy for me. It took me 2 years of doing mathematics to try and discover how long his staff was precisely. And the Bible tells us in two places, one that it lay inside of the ark in the book of Kings, and in the books of Moses, there are symbols of the staff of, you see, there's 12 staffs. Aaron's staff is the most famous. Moses' staff is also very famous, but actually God tells Moses to build 12 staffs, and the staffs lay inside of the ark, and the ark is 2.5 cubits, but that's not easy to resolve a cubit in inches because there's cubit wars out there. Everybody's got a cubit theory, and when you look at the ancient Egyptian measuring rods themselves, because they varied, and they only found two or three of these rulers, they vary between 20.6 and 20.8 inches approximately per cubit. And a cubit defined biblically is in the book of Ezekiel, where this angel or this divine being comes down and he's holding a 6-cubit staff. And he tells the prophet Ezekiel that a God's cubit is a cubit plus a handbreadth. And that's not a measurement. That's a symbol, right? So if I measure my elbow to fingertip, that's only a symbol in a language sense of what a common builder's cubit is. But God uses the royal cubit, and this is the symbol. And so I was looking, like, if there's a variance in the Egyptian rulers, then the Egyptians didn't know the absolute royal cubit. And so who did? Well, the pyramid itself did. So when I looked at Peter Lemazurier's book, who was a very famous French mathematician who wrote The Great Pyramid Decoded, published in the mid-70s. He found in over 14 places consistently that 2 royal cubits was 41.21 inches. So half of that is a true, consistent, repeatable, and reliable royal cubit. And I don't know why no one's noticed this. I would be the first one since Lemazurier to notice that if you have a consistent, repeatable, and reliable measurement, accurate to the thousandths of an inch column, because the 5, 605 is in the thousandths of an inch column, And even today's lasers, like this is a Leica laser, right, for example. And I can use this laser to measure, but this Leica laser is only accurate to 2 decimals, so the 1/100th of an inch column. So the fact that a royal cubit would be accurate to the 1/1000th of an inch column would be technically impossible unless the ancient architect of the pyramid, or even a 1/100th of an inch column, had the ability to use something like a laser. So, because you can't do it manually.
You know what I'm thinking? As we get into this deeper and deeper, let's clarify who you mean by angels and gods.
Well, I see, that's what we don't know. For me, I've been meditating every day for over 40 years, and it's taken me my whole life. I've been with a lot of really notable meditation masters. And I started out with a teacher who spent most of the end of his life in the Santa Cruz mountain area, Baba Haridas. And I had many mystical experiences with him, you know, as a young teenager when I started meditation. And now, you know, going into my 59th year this year, when I meditate, within 10 minutes, there's so much ecstasy. It's so bright. It gets so bright that sometimes it's hard to contain how much bliss there is. And to answer your question, who are angels and gods, as an experience, when you testify something, you put it to the test and you say, what do the scriptures say a divine or enlightened state is, and what can I test? How can I test that, and what can I experience? And ultimately, from reading hundreds of spiritual manuscripts from Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, and the Bible, and the ancient Hebrew studies I've done, the test shows that as you become more illuminated and you raise your frequencies to these very precise frequency wavelengths, there are fields that are very profound at certain levels of these bliss frequencies. And that field itself, you can define as an infinite God, grand organizing designer field. And there are individuals who mastered tuning into those specific fields that have specific functions. One function might be actual physical manifestation power. And I've experienced that with my staff really powerfully recently.
Okay, tell me then, and this is important in today's world, what has been your personal experience with holding the staff?
Well, first thing is I leave it on all day, and I do these calibrated interval frequencies that are based on frequency measurements I took out of the Holy of Holies cube in Solomon's temple, which happens to be the same measurement as the King and Queen's chamber in the Great Pyramid. And I'll explain that in a minute. And I run these frequencies through my body in series. And the first things that started to happen were divine visitations. I mean, I had blinding beings show up. I was just falling asleep. I had just done the staff. And this beautiful golden yellow bird just came down. And it was so high frequency, its wings were flapping almost like a hummingbird, but it wasn't a hummingbird. And I felt this glorious presence around this golden yellow bird. And you have to remember, the symbol of the Holy Spirit bird landing on the top of the father of Christ, Joseph's staff, to announce that he's going to be the father of this golden child. But this wasn't a white bird. This was a yellow bird. And the earliest depictions of the Ark of the Covenant, some of the very earliest sources says there wasn't two cherubim angels bowing towards each other on the ark. There were two birds. So you get into the Holy Spirit it's not just a symbol. It's an actual bird of God that appears at the time of Christ when he's baptized and John the Baptist in the River Jordan. And the bird is actually representing God's voice and speaks, saying, this is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. And this announces the beginning of the ministry of Christ. And so the bird, for me, has showed up several times and with intense illumination, intense mind-blowing ecstasy and bliss just radiating off the crown area of my body. And so the more I've done these frequencies, the more spectacular dreams I had. But then there were physical manifestations that started that were very powerful. Like when I built my first one and I calibrated the measurement using the proper royal cubit, the Ark of the Covenant is 2.5 cubits and the staff lay in the Ark. So there you go. It's 2.5 cubits. And what's amazing about that, before I go a bit further, because my mind goes into millions of places. So I'm in the Shroud of Turin. Christ is exactly the same height as me, which is a tad over 6 feet. So when he stands up to hold his staff, you see.
And you're basing this on the Shroud of Turin?
On the Shroud of Turin, Jesus is the same height as me.
Okay.
So if he's holding his staff the same height, your arm comes out at 90 degrees, and the bulb of the staff is just above my grip. And that's perfect.
Right.
Okay. So Jesus said in Mark 6, verse 8, when he disperses the 12, you know, apostles and the seven women, that he says, you can save nothing for your journey, no money in your purse, no script, just your staff. Okay. So he puts absolute iconic importance on the staff. And yet Christianity knows nothing about the staff. In fact, to this day, they don't know anything about it. But yet there it is in Mark 6, verse 8. So why the staff? Because what happens is this is a frequency just by its length. Even though mine is plugged in and I'm transmitting the 515125 frequency right now, and the rubies in the bottom of the staff and the big amethyst I have in the top, and I have, you know, lab-grown sapphires and citrines. The Bible tells us that the moment Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden, this is in what's called these are the scrolls on the Lost Books of Eden, they're called. In the Lost Books of Eden, Adam and Eve, which I believe was a regenesis, you know, male, female, human being after the great flood, and they were basically being re-engineered. And by the Supreme Creator, the Supreme Creator being, and we don't know, we call it, is it the Grand Organizing Designer Energy Field, or is it a person, right? Or is it a group of people? Well, there's a lot of stories and a lot of creation myths. But when Adam and Eve are, they partake of this proverbial knowledge of good and evil, which is going from the singular field of light into duality. And a duality can't exist in a singular field, because even in quantum mechanics, that can't happen. That's Paul Dirac's, you know, studies that Dirac found in the singular non-dual substratum to the universe, which is all pervasive and pre-existed the cosmic microwave background. Everything is faster than light, instantaneous, regardless of distance. But as soon as you go into duality, you give birth to electron-positron pairs, all the subatomic particles, everything has a dual pair in it, then everything slows down, and then time is born. There is no time in infinitude, in this infinite sea of singularity, but when you go into duality, you're going into conflict, right? So you take in good and evil, now you have a problem. You have to define good and evil, and your neighbor's going to define it differently. And your other neighbor's going to define it differently. So you're all going to argue about what's good and what's bad. And that's the illusion. So Adam and Eve are expelled, and God sends an angel to give them a staff. And the staff has clearly defined sapphires, and it has the coil, like mine has the coil. And the staff allows them to communicate with this God field, because now they no longer have direct access, because they're not in singularity anymore. They're in duality. They're in the dual Maya illusory universe field. So the staff allowed them to communicate. And what's amazing is if you look, Rahasya, in all of the Egyptian temples, it doesn't matter how many temples you go into, you're going to see these iconic male and female figures, from Isis to Osiris to Hathor to, you know, Nephthys, all of them have their staff, all of them. And this isn't just a toy. This thing gets so deep, this measurement, this measurement, which we measured with a laser, where we make these in Sedona, Arizona. My jeweler Fred Shute makes these to my specifications.
Yeah, that's beautiful work, by the way.
Yeah, Fred's work is miraculous. Like, I gave him, you know, the concept. The coil is one golden ratio to the height. And the Great Pyramid is built on the golden ratio, and the Holy of Holies is built on the golden ratio.
You know, I've often thought the Holy of Holies, you know, originally, mm-hmm. I mean, I was thinking before I started looking at some of your research, it was just probably a radio, you know, mm-hmm. go into the Holy of Holies with the priest, with the important religious leaders of the time, and they were talking to God. But somewhere along the line, the radio or the staff disappeared, and they still kept going in there and telling the people that they were communicating with God, when in reality, they probably weren't.
See, the Holy of Holies is a cube in Solomon's temple, and it's 20 by 20 by 20 cubits. And if you use, as per the book of Ezekiel, the royal cubit to inches, your Holy of Holies cube is a vessel for a frequency. And I've calculated the Holy of Holies precisely, comes to 34.34 feet, precisely. And its radius is 17.17 feet. Now, when you go to the King's Chamber in the Great Pyramid, its length is 34.34 feet, which is precisely 412.1 inches. And its width is 17.17 feet, which is the radius of the Holy of Holies in Solomon's temple, because the radius is half the width. So if you drew a circle inside of Solomon's temple, your radius is 17.17 feet, which is the width of both the king and the queen's chamber in the Great Pyramid. So that tells me whoever designed the Great Pyramid is the same architect as the God of Moses and the prophets.
Right.
And then Jesus in the Gospel of Philip refers to that you need to attain the resurrection, which is the light body, while you live, and you do it in the Holy of Holies. And that he refers to himself as the son of the bridal chamber, which is the Holy of Holies in the Gospel of Philip, because his mother from the age of three was raised by the priests inside of the temple. So what gets more amazing is in the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's a scroll called Temple Scroll. And Temple Scroll is a scroll that recently was proved to have been physically printed with some type of technology rather than pen and ink. It was a sophisticated printer technology that didn't exist in those days. And the Temple Scroll is very unique, and that God gives Moses a new supermassive Holy of Holies measurement to build a cube 280 by 280 by 280 cubits. And 280 cubits times 20.605 inches, the precise number I'm using, is the finished height of the Great Pyramid of Egypt. So there's the God of the prophets giving you a measurement that's identical to the height of the Great Pyramid of Egypt. And I'm the one who figured this out. So guess what this measurement is. So if I take my staff at 51.5125 inches times its wavelength, which is times 4, I'm at exactly 17.17 feet, the radius of the Holy of Holies and the exact width of the king and the queen's chamber of Egypt. So this staff is much more interesting and profound as a measuring tool for building these sacred temples. And exactly 112 staff lengths, which in Hebrew gematria means the Lord God, and I see God as the grand organizing designer of the universe. It's a field of energy that operates you can access that field of energy at a certain frequency. And this is your tool. By holding this and working with this every day for 2 years now, you start to tap into this power field. So exactly 112 of these is the height of the Great Pyramid of Egypt. Exactly. I mean, we're not even a penny off. So that means that there is a connection between the God of the prophets and the Holy of Holies that was sacred to both the Jews and Muslims, because the Muslims have the Kaaba, in the tent, and the tent's measurements are supposed to be a holy of holies, even though their measurement is off by just a little bit. They're not using the most accurate royal cubit over there, but they're not off by much. And that space is the home of the feminine manifestation, which is a sphere of light whose radius is 17.17 feet, which is the wavelength of the staff. So that explains why the staffs lay inside of the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was inside of the Holy of Holies. But now we have the Great Pyramid height equaling the Holy of Holies in the Temple Scroll, which nobody ever built a cube that height. But I argue that the Great Pyramid is actually what I call the Great Holy of Holies from the previous great epoch. Now, this is where it gets mind-blowing. One more thing. I go with my family to Chaco Canyon, New Mexico with my Leica laser, with my kids. And Chaco Canyon is the first First Nation Native American civilized city that was in a state of recoverable ruins when the first European settlers came here. And when it was discovered, they had all already left, and they migrated and became the Anasazi and the Hopi Indians of what we now call today. But at Chaco Canyon are these sacred circles made of precise measurements. And I go in there with my Leica laser, and I'm measuring a perfect Holy of Holies circle. And I'm asking myself, this isn't off by 5 inches. This isn't off by 3 inches. It's not even off by more than 1 inch. And I'm asking myself, how did they know this measurement? Why do they have this measurement, 34.34 feet? Why? Because this universal God, grand organizing designer, gave these measurements to multiple peoples of the world and multiple cultures, because the measurement of the circle sets up a resonant electromagnetic wave cavity that tunes the occupants of that space in a meditation to this frequency where this power of the what I call the God field really exists. So the frequencies that I'm running through my body right now, through the staff, I can measure it with a meter off of this hand over here. But the person holding the meter can't be holding the staff, so I would need another person here. And I remember I demonstrated that in the George Norrie interview.
Yeah, because he would have been part of the circuit.
He's part of the circuit, which I am right now, right? So if I touch this microphone here, then the frequencies are actually going through the recording right now.
You know, it seems to me, David, that you've really taken Tesla serious when he said, if you want to understand the universe, understand it as frequencies.
Absolutely. And Tesla also said about the numbers 3, 6, and 9. And I realized that there's a lot of theories out there on 3, 6, and 9, but there's one that everybody missed. Okay, so the Great Pyramid was built on the golden ratio. So if you take the height of the Great Pyramid today times the golden ratio of 1.618033988.87, and that's just under 481 feet. It's smaller than 481 feet. It comes to precisely 777.77 feet, all sevens. Now, to get the pyramid angle of 51 degrees and 51 minutes, you just take a golden rectangle, side A, the shorter side, times side B, 1.618033988.87 times that, and you build a rectangle. And then you just follow your sides into the middle, and you measure your slope angle, and you've got 51 degrees and 51 minutes.
So, and David.
So watch 3, 6, and 9 here, though. Watch 3, okay. 6, and 9. So you take your golden rectangle, and you make a slope angle from the hypotenuse.
Right.
And guess what you have here? 90-degree corner, 60-degree corner, 30-degree corner. 3, 6, and 9. And that, when Tesla said that 3, 6, and 9 were the secret to the universe, it's the golden ratio rectangle. What was known as the, in the Egyptian, this is in Robert Temple's book, Egyptian Don, where's the book? I usually have it sitting here. And he shows you what is called the golden angle of resurrection, where the pharaohs would lay at this angle, taking a golden rectangle, hypotenuse, and they lay at that angle during ceremonies. And they actually lay at that angle during lovemaking as well. And it's kind of funny in his book, because when the Muslims found the inscriptions in stone, they would show the male pharaohs lying at this angle with their erections, and then they just chopped them all off because they were offended. But that was, for them, that was sacred, for the body to lay at that angle. So again, it's all built on the golden ratio. And so it's very, very profound. Everything in the staff corresponds to all of that.
Well, that just gave me something to think about. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. No, there's got to be something to it. Like, I've wondered with the priests laying. I mean, you can go to Robert Temple's website, and he has the photographs up on the site.
Yeah, I'm going to write that down.
It might be in the book, The Mystery of the Sphinx. I'm trying to remember which book of his. He has Egyptian Dawn, Mystery of the Sphinx, The Crystal Sun, Sirius Mystery. You know, those are Robert Temple's books. And if he's still around, he would make a great interview for you.
You know what I'm thinking, David? Mm-hmm. Like, how does this apply to the world we live in? Because let's face it, the world we live in is in trouble right now. And it seems like every time we come up with a solution, it has a problem attached to it. And could that be because the information that we're getting from this third dimension frequency of polarity is built into it? No matter what you do, there's an opposite. And what we need is information from a higher level that goes beyond polarity and learn how to decipher it in such a way that we can actually apply it to our world.
Well, see, we can. See, for one, right now we're running the internet with all these microwave towers, and we're running the internet at disharmonic frequencies. So there's disruptive frequencies. In fact, even Royal Rife found certain frequencies would disrupt a virus. Right. That doesn't mean the disruptive frequency to the virus is what you want to live with all day. It just means some frequencies are harmonizing and some will destroy pathogens and viruses and even cancer, arguably. But, and, you know, we have devices, you know, that work with those frequencies for healing of the body. But with the staff, what it does is it sends you into these incredible dreams and vision states and realization states where whatever answers you're looking for in the universe, they just appear to you with absolute clarity. And recently, on a more physical level, this is just a simple example. Like, I was holding my staff, and it was Christmas morning, and we were out of firewood, and it's snowing here like it is right now.
Yeah, I see the snow in the background there.
Yeah, see, and I was like, oh my God, we need more firewood. And there's snow, and the trees that are lying on the ground that I normally cut into are all, you know, got a foot and a half of snow on them. So I pointed my staff to the north, to the east, and the west, but I mainly decided to focus on the north because I knew there were trees up there, and we have a road going up there. So Christmas morning, I get my chainsaw, and I'm like, I'm going to find some wood up there. No storm, nothing. This massive tree, super huge tree, just fell right towards my staff. I mean, I measured the tip of the tree, where it's pointing to in the house, and it's way up on the hill. Like, so this is, you know, southern British Columbia. It's not like the trees are sparse up there. And why didn't a tree fall away from my staff or at some other angle? Why right towards it? And it wasn't lightning. I looked at the base of the tree. It was just a clean drop. Like, the tree was just dropped. And I went up there with my saw and started cutting it up Christmas morning. And I'm still burning that tree right now to keep our house warm. And another example recently is I hired this marketing guy who, his name was Dennis Wong, to do all my marketing and market my business. And he locked me out of my YouTube channel, stole davidcerita.net, and copied all my devices and started making them out of cheap garbage and made himself a new website. And he stole all my customers, all my emails. And so I was locked out of my YouTube channel, and my YouTube login is my name. It's my name. And YouTube wouldn't give it back to me. This guy had my channel for 2 years. So in order to sign into your YouTube channel, you have your Gmail, and mine was davidbcerita@gmail.com, which they say now he owns because he has the passwords. So you have an alternate phone number, and you have the passwords, right? So I couldn't get in for 2 years. So I held my staff, and I faced, you know, the four directions, and I said, I need help to get in to my YouTube channel because this guy stole my channel. I had 35,000 subscribers, and I had all my videos going back all the way to 2006, 14 years. And he had turned them all off and put up all his videos and saying he's the new, you know, guy to follow. And my subscribers don't know what the heck's going on. They think I'm authorizing this. So I just go to Gmail, and my phone number is a new phone number. Never was associated with that account when he stole it 2 years ago. And Gmail just sends me a passcode to my phone, my new phone, and lets me in. And so I deleted hundreds of his videos and started turning mine back on. And then an hour later, Gmail kicked me out because it doesn't know how I got in. And I attribute that to the power of my intention being magnified with the grand organizing designer super field of God, because that's what I asked for. I asked them to help me take this guy down because my customers don't even know what's going on because he's locked me out of my channel, my website, and I can't get anybody, GoDaddy, nobody. It's all just automatic. Whoever has the passcodes is the owner of the site.
See, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. It's like somebody stealing a Bible.
I know. All of my work, my life's work, this guy has stolen. And now I've created a new website, which is davidcerita.co. instead of my old website, which I won't even name anymore because he stole it.
Right.
And this is the kind of stuff that happened. Now let's go back, because this reminds me when Adam and Eve are kicked out of the Garden of Eden and God sends the angel to give them the first staff, which eventually their staff gets, it's like the sword and the stone with Excalibur. It gets placed in a stone rock and nobody can pull it out, except for the prophet, I believe it was Abraham, who pulls it out of the stone. Now, there are scenes in the lost books of the Bible where Adam and Eve are constantly being tricked by the deceiver God, who goes by the name Satan. And there's this scene where Adam has his staff, and Satan appears, and he has his staff. This is like the beginning of Star Wars. And God tells Adam, because Satan is glowing with light, his staff is glowing with light, and God tells Adam to smite Satan's staff with his staff. And he does, and it completely disables Satan for the moment. It doesn't destroy him permanently.
Right.
And one of the experiences I had on my birthday, two birthdays ago, we were camping in Tofino, British Columbia, and I have this dream that I'm holding my staff and I come upon this, you know, Luciferian being, very famous being, and he wants to do battle with me. And in the dream, when you look at him, you're looking at a being who radiates pure conflict energy. It's just like Star Wars. You know, don't get sucked into the conflict, just stay in the light. And our staffs were like lightsabers. And I was matching every blow he made towards me at incredible speed. And it went on for half an hour. And I realized he was unbeatable. Nobody could beat him because he's the master of conflict, because he's the first angel that went from singularity to conflict energy. And all of a sudden, I raised my staff to heaven in the dream. And this is before I got this one, but this was in a dream. And this light just came into my body from the God field at the frequency that I'm using now, the 515125 megahertz. And I moved, it was like the Matrix. I moved so fast, I sliced them into millions of tiny pieces the size of atoms. Just shredded him in less than 1 second. But it wasn't me who did it. You see, it was really God who did it. I gave up fighting because the duality was equal, right? I'm caught in duality and Satan is the being who took in duality. And it was really like Star Wars. It was really incredible. And I just shredded him in 1 second. And I realized the whole thing is an illusion. The whole...
You know, what you're saying right now is so important with the idea of we just have to get out of the way of anything happening like a miracle or a healing or anything. I see healers starting to identify with their healing and it starts disappearing.
Disappears. Yeah, you have to get out of the way. I mean, that's the thing is when you're meditating and you know, I used to do these long Buddhist meditations, like, you know, 7 hours a day, and you get a little bit of bliss and you get this bliss experience and then you lose it.
Right.
Like, get it back. And you trace your steps, you meditate like that again, and you can't get it. But what happens over time, repeating the practices, that eventually you build neural pathways that know exactly where the real God field is. And it's actually everywhere, but you have to eventually reach this state of not looking, but yet you're meditating.
Right.
And you don't identify with your body, your personality, your name. You're not negating it either. You see, you're not saying, you're not going to be humble and abase yourself. You're not going to destroy yourself. You just go into this state of total here and now. Ram Dass was just dead on. It's just here and now. There's nothing else. And then this bliss starts to come. And it gets so intense, it's at times, it's wondrous, where is all this ecstasy coming from, I ask myself. Like, where is it? And what is its purpose, ultimately? Well, one, and putting, you know, the God prophecy to the test, is God said in Revelation that every tear from every eye will be wiped. Well, the God field conquers all suffering. And it conquers all memory that you ever suffered in the past, because the bliss starts to overwhelm you. And it becomes more and more and more accessible. But then sometimes I ask, well, now that I don't have much of a memory of suffering and I can feel this bliss almost every day, except for some really bad days, what's next? Like, am I just going to sit here and be in this bliss forever? Are there manifestations that we're supposed to be doing? Like you said, what can we bring down or from that light God field that we're all a part of?
Yeah, I think this kind of information we're talking about in a Heinleinian sense, we need to learn how to grok it with a different way of perceiving information. And I really think, David, that we're entering in times right now. I'm probably in a organized religion sense, I'm probably the least religious person that you could know. But the more I start seeing the world, the more I'm seeing that there are parts in throughout the Bible, the Vedic literature, the Upanishads, all of this stuff is talking about a point in time that seems like it's right now. And information is coming in, like the information that you have about making the staff. I'm sure you did a lot of mathematics and everything else, but a lot of it was probably intuitive language that was coming through you, and you learned how to decipher it as being important information to follow up on.
Right. See, frequency determines different aspects of consciousness more than anything. So we do breathing practices to enliven the body, to get the prana and the energy flowing. And then we can do toning practices that start to vibrate all the atoms at these very different intervals and pitches. And we have mantras, which are sacred words that should be intoned at precise pitches, but it's frequency that determines a great portion of the consciousness and the potential consciousness in the human electrical energy field. So with all the internet microwave towers, and there's hundreds of thousands of them,
yes,
running at disharmonic intervals, one of the things that I've grounded recently out of this is there are very high frequencies they can run the internet at that would be perfect. And when you look at Fibonacci's number sequence, 0, 0, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, and it just keeps going, you'll eventually come to 7.77 gigahertz, right? And that is a Fibonacci, which means golden ratio number, because you approach the golden ratio way before you get to the 7.7.
That's pretty close to the Earth's frequency, right?
Well, no, I'm talking gigahertz now.
Oh, gigahertz.
See, the Earth frequency is 7.83 hertz fundamental. There are different bands of the Earth frequencies, which has led people mistakenly to believe the Earth is changing frequency, but there are multiple bands. But the point is, when you get to a number that is comparable to numbers they're running the internet at, that's a harmonic, all we have to do is shift and operate the internet on these harmonic bands, and you go to the next Fibonacci number, and you get up to the 100 and something gigahertz bands and the 300 gigahertz bands, which is where they're running the internet today. Some of the cell phone companies are right up there in 300 gigahertz.
You know, and, David, just real quick, like I think since this is going to be played a lot on my radio show and it's just audio, let's tell the listeners about your new website and different ways to get a hold of you throughout this conversation.
Sure, sure. My new website is my name, David, D-A-V-I-D, S as in Sam, E-R-E-D as in David, A, davidsarita.co, like Colorado, but it's just C-O, which really is dot company, right? So dot C-O.
Right.
davidsarita.co, and you can personally email me davidsarita@hotmail.com. Now, because there's all these fraud David Sarita websites out there, and even this guy is sending out emails with my name on it saying that I'm reaching out to you, it's not me. If you didn't get an email from davidsarita@hotmail.com or my salesperson, Shy Rose Walji, then it's not me. So it's only davidsarita.co right now.
Okay. Yeah, we need to help you get that information out there more.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Rahasia. So I see the possibility of the fires in California. When you have that many microwave towers situated along the highways everywhere in these towns in the summer, with cellular activities really high, microwaves can start fires.
Yep.
And that's because the energy gets intense enough for an ignition. And it's possible even for someone to hack them and triangulate signals to form a beam and set a fire and trigger a fire in high fire conditions.
And there's many, many, many instances where when the electric company turns off a big block of energy, when they turn it back on, smart meters can burn, just completely blow up and burn out, and that can start fires too.
Right, and it's easy to block a smart meter. I have a kit that I sell that shows you. See, you don't want to block all the. If you use blocking materials around your whole house, you're going to block the Earth frequency, the Venus frequency, the frequencies of the stars. You're going to block everything, and you're going to live in a wave trap where you're just gonna cook in there. You're not going to survive by blocking out all the frequencies. If you block everything, you block everything. You can't choose, I want the good frequencies, not the bad ones.
Well, you know, I think you can opt out in Canada, right?
Well, where we are now in this office building, it is zero in here. And that's because I'm running on a cable. I'm using Ethernet and I'm 30 feet from my house. No, I don't have my meter in here. It's in the house, but it's absolutely zero in here. So you can run your internet, your computer off Ethernet stations, and they will be zero radiation free. You can also One of the products I sell is harmonically measured grounding rods that are very sacred measurements in the grounding rods, and you put them in the corners of your drywall where the corner meets, and then you attach them to ground, electrical right. ground. But they have to be at harmonic intervals between each other, like musical notes. And that will discharge to ground any strong fields that build up in your house. But a smart meter is easy to block. What you do is you take quarter-inch steel plate, and on the inside of the wall, you got to put a big plate about, you know, a minimum 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet. You drill a hole in it, and you send it to ground. It has to be grounded. Now, these little meshes that go over the smart meters aren't doing anything, because if they were, the power company wouldn't be retrieving the data on your power usage. So
right.
you don't want to block them. You just don't want it coming in the house. So you have this big steel plate on the wall, and you hang a picture over it. And then that will prevent the signal from getting in the house. But it has to be electrically grounded properly. And that'll do it. I've tested it with meters. It's a very simple solution. Anybody can do it. But I have more sophisticated means of keeping your home running at a harmonic. One, you can, like, I leave my staff on all the time. And due to the piezoelectric effect, all these gems are emitting gem auric fields into the house. And my coil and my staff, because it's the proper length, is going to transmit this and slowly create a portal to the what I call the God field for your
home. You
know,
this makes sense too when you see some of the Egyptian gods, in air quotes there. They're wearing all kinds of gems and sapphires and everything. And it seems like sapphire is an important one, right?
Well, see, the throne of God in the book of Ezekiel and the first prophet Enoch was sapphire. And sapphires are used by radio astronomers for masers. They use rubies and sapphires. And masers allow radio astronomers to get very clear bands of microwave frequencies so they can differentiate the microwave spectrum rather than just, you know, not be able to tune through it. So a sapphire is an aluminum crystal. It's actually an aluminum crystal, very unlike most other gems that contain silica or quartz crystal, right? Quartz. But sapphire doesn't have any quartz. Like a ruby is a chromium gem, and chromium is amazing stuff. It has amazing, amazing properties. So what I do, like we have our new Lightstream wands that we just came out with. We have, you know, four different levels of wands, and we use tourmaline, pure lab-grown ruby and sapphire because it's actually better than the natural ones. The natural ones have impurities in them. And then we use amethyst, citrine, and topazes on these sidebands. So with all of my post-electromagnetic field devices, we use gems instead of just electromagnets because gems, when they pulse, they emit beautiful auras. I mean, I've seen photographs taken of the auras of gemstones, and every gemstone has a different aura, but they only produce an aura when they're electrified. So right now, like the gem on the top of my staff here, and all these gems, the rubies, the garnets, they're all vibrating in the frequencies, right? So you hold your staff, you work with your staff plugged in, and you leave it on in the house all the time, so it generates an energy field. It activates the kundalini, the spiritual life force energy in the spine. The spine is calcium and collagen and trace minerals like phosphorus. So the calcium part of the spine is a metal, which means your spine is a conductor rod.
So when you're saying plugged in, are you plugging it into the grounding part?
No, I'm plugged in at the bottom.
Right.
Which is connected to my frequency generator over here, which you can't see. I'd have to pull the plug out.
No, it's okay.
And I'm transmitting 5.15125 megahertz at 15 volts right now. So if you take the capstone of the Great Pyramid, the unfinished capstone, 572.5 0.2 something inches per side times four sides. The speed and light of inches divided by that is 5.15125 megahertz. And that's the same number built into the slope angle of the Great Pyramid. So
is that, is the fact that it's plugged in, is that just an enhancement?
Oh, no, the whole thing is transmitting frequencies into my body and this room right now. Oh, no, you can measure it on a meter. If I have a meter, but I see the person holding the staff can't take the reading because meter needs to be not connected to the circuit. And you can see, like, my whole body right now is lit up like a Christmas tree with these frequencies. So my nervous system is memorizing what is the meaning of the frequency of the capstone base of the Great Pyramid. Well, just recently, there was, can I do share screen with you or not?
I'm not too sure.
Well, so right, just recently, there was this famous Russian study and some German scientists transmitted frequencies into the Great Pyramid and it started to light up. And they give you in the study the wavelengths and it first forms a Maltese cross, and then it starts to transform into what looks like the shape of a divine person with outstretched arms and a glowing head and a glowing chest with these rays coming down towards the feet and up into the sky. And when I compared the wavelengths and converted them to frequencies, they're in the same frequency bands I decoded in the Great Pyramid years ago. And those are the ones that we're working with the staff. So you can clearly see in this imagery that the study proved that the Great Pyramid's wavelength measurements are frequencies that it responds to, and it starts to light up at these frequencies. So that means we as people, what Jesus said in the Gospel of Philip is that you need to attain the resurrection when you live. And he says, if you don't attain it when you live, when you die, you'll get nothing.
Right.
And that was in the Gospel of Philip. So he's very explicit in the Gospel of Philip that the Holy of Holies is the bridal chamber where the person gets activated. So when I calculated the wavelength of the Holy of Holies measurement, both the circle and the square, I got the same frequencies that are in the Great Pyramid scale. Exactly.
You know, you just touched on something, David, that a lot of Christians won't even go there.
Oh, they won't.
But in the Bible, it says you must be reborn again in the spirit in this life to enter the kingdom of heaven.
Right. Exactly. And that's exactly what he means in the Gospel of Philip. Right. Being reborn is having your spiritual body activated, your light body switched on. And there's a ritual for doing that was called the chrism. And the chrism is olive oil that has been anointed by the Spirit of God. But in the Gospel of Philip, the chrism, which Jesus said is superior to the baptism, is attained in the Holy of Holies. And the Holy of Holies is a frequency. And the frequency is proportional to the staff, which is why Jesus said in Mark 6, verse 8, you have to have your staff.
Right.
And you can forget everything but your staff. And so they probably picture in their head, because they saw Charlton Heston in the movie, that Moses had a wooden stick and that Jesus would just have him walking around with sticks. But when you look and you know your history properly, the staff that was given to Adam and Eve, and there are different descriptions of Moses' staff. One of them that it's brass with a coiled serpent. But I believe the serpent, again, is the language of symbols. It's not to be taken literally. He obviously wasn't walking around with a snake on his staff. The serpent is the symbol of the coil. And so, See, the base has a ball. Then I have my coil, which is golden ratio proportion. And then I have the gems on the head. So the staff of Moses and there are many different books of Moses in different ancient sources clearly had sapphires in it, clearly. And there's one version where the whole staff would have been a sapphire. And does that mean it was an aluminum staff with sapphire gems in it? Because a sapphire and aluminum are the same thing. the sapphire is a crystallized aluminum, and aluminum is aluminum, but chemically they're the same.
You know, David, we're coming up to the top of the hour.
Yeah.
Man, this time went quick. Let's tell everybody your website again and how to get a hold of you.
My website is my name, David Cerreda, which is spelled S as in Sam, E-R-E-D-A .co. DavidCerreda.co. Trust no other websites that have my name on it, because we have a lot of hacked websites and people who are trying to knock off my technology and steal it. Don't trust anybody unless you get an email from myself or my salesperson, Shiro's Walji.
Yep.
So thank you very much again. It's great being here. Yep.
Thank you for your time, David.
You too.